realize these are chronologically done.
Yep. I'll just get us through, don't worry. I'll make it. All right. Basically, the book has got five parts. And actually, it's got an introduction and a conclusion kind of thing. In fact, that last part, as far as I know, it's the best description of what happened in 586 anywhere. It goes into more detail than most passages on that. So that, I think, is the best part, is chapter 52. Explain, and it looks like it's tacked on. I mean, it doesn't seem to flow through the structure. It seems like it's a part kind of tacked on to tell you how Jerusalem gets sacked. Okay? The book of Jeremiah, I call it the weeping prophet, because throughout the book he's weeping. But he's weeping for his nation that's actually falling apart and going to be destroyed. Okay, so I can understand why he's weeping, because it's a sad thing that's going to happen. Okay? To inform the nation of Israel that they're going to be taken into Babylonian captivity for 70 years, but afterwards God will bring them out and bring them back to the land. So basically, Jeremiah is the one that actually tells them how long they're going to be in captivity. Okay, and several times he has to chasten them and say, in one place he sends them a letter and says, take root, grow in the land, because you're going to be there a while. Because the false prophets were saying, you're going to get to come back really soon. And Jeremiah had to send them a letter and say, that's not true, you're going to be there a while, so get ready. Okay? You've got book one that's oracles against Jerusalem, talks about their sin and wickedness and all that. Then you've got a biographical interlude, basically talks about the temple sermon and stuff like that. Then there's a book of what we call consolation, kind of talking about consoling them. Then there's a second biographical interlude, then the oracles against the nations. Remember, almost all the major prophets and some of the minor ones have these oracles against the nations. So, just so you realize, almost all of them have it. Okay? All right, introduction. Date is from anywhere from 627 to 580. That seems to be when he lived. It says, go to Jeremiah 1:2. It says there, the words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priests who were in Anathoth in the land of Benjamin. Do you see what he is? He's a priest. Okay, you just learned that just there. To whom the word of the Lord came in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. It came about in the days of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, until the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, son of Josiah, king of Judah, until the exile of Babylon in the 5th month. Basically, we can actually go through and figure out when these dates are. Josiah's cleansing is in the 12th year of Josiah's reign. That's going to be about 628 to 27, somewhere in there. Jeremiah's calls in 627, so this gives you some clue as to the timing of how they work together. So right when Josiah is giving his message to cleanse the temple, Jeremiah is now being called. Okay, so that I think in some sense they're working together. In 626, though, Babylon's rebellion and independence comes. So that's the 14th year. Whoops. That's the 14th year of Josiah's reign. So in these 3 years, a lot of things happen. Okay? It says he's born in Anathoth. That's about 3 miles north of Jerusalem. The priest, that's a Levitical city or a priestly city. They then apparently come down from Anathoth to do their job in Jerusalem and then go back. Okay? This actually helps us some too. It says he's a lad in 627, that's when he's called. If that's true, he's probably about 20 or under 30 for sure. If that's true, he was born in about, let's say, roughly, in 647. Manasseh's reign is from 687 to 642. So you see they overlap? So when he's born, when Jeremiah is born, Manasseh's reign is still in full swing. Okay, so you can see what kind of influences are during his time. It looks like he probably was living at least sometime during Manasseh's reign. The name Jeremiah is fairly common in the Old Testament. 10 people at least are named Jeremiah. In fact, it's written two ways. One has Yahoo at the end. The other way, Yah. So it's different forms of the name Yahweh. Okay. The first one occurs 120 times. Second one only occurs 9 times. So it is kind of unusual. He has two names. Even I mean, it's written differently within the same book. That's unusual. Both Yahu and Yah are shortened forms of Yahweh. His name possibly means Yahweh exalts, or may Yahweh exalt, depending on you how you do it. Yahweh founds, Yahweh loosens, or Yahweh throws. All of these other ones are basically either Akkadian or an odd meaning of Hebrew. I actually think it must have something to do with Rub. Notice the first part. So it's got something to do with exalt Yahweh or something like that. Okay? At least I think that makes the most sense. Jeremiah was from a priestly family. Hilkiah was one of the one of the priests in the land of Benjamin. So that gives you some background for it. It is interesting. Is during the Assyrian age, you've got Amos, Hosea, Isaiah, Micah, and Jonah. Now we're in the Babylonian age, and you're going to get all of these prophets. We're at Jeremiah now, but all these prophets during that time. Then in the Persian age, you're going to get Haggai, Zechariah, Joel, Malachi, and then Obadiah. So you can see what's going on there.
Oh, Joel. Joel's one is really...
We don't know when Joel is for sure, but I think it fits best at that time. Okay? All right, let's look at chapter 1. Here's what it gives us, that date. His call is in, from what we can tell, notice its date is... in the 13th year of his reign of Josiah. So that'll put it about 627. Okay? We'll look at it later. It goes until just Jehoiakim's released from prison. The last thing mentioned in Jeremiah 51:64 is the release from prison, Jehoiakim's. So if that's true, that means he prophesies for about 65 years. If he was about 20 when he starts, so he's at least 75 by the end of his life. Okay, he actually prophesies less than, from what we can tell, Isaiah. But even then, he's got a long life of prophecy. Okay, so that's actually helpful. Okay, I put this in here because the book is not in chronological order again. So it jumps around. So what I tried to do is give you the kings and then the passages that seem to fit the time periods.
This is guesswork?
No, some of them will actually tell us what kings it is. But other than that, some of these, I don't think they're necessarily guesses. Usually they tell what king they're during. So that gives us some help. Yeah.
Have we found any other like prophecies from this time frame? Or like from like... Jeremiah, that's just not in the scripture. I mean, obviously, they probably had more than one. What's written here, I'm assuming they had probably more than one interaction with God or a prophecy that was given or a vision.
Yeah. I'm not sure what you're saying. Asking, is there more prophets during this time?
No. I mean, in a sense of them revealing, God revealing something to them so that they could speak to the nation. That's not in scripture, meaning?
Not that we know. I mean, it'd be hard to know stuff that they said that's not recorded. I mean, I guess as they do.
Well, I mean, recorded, but just not put into the text.
You mean extra-biblical text? Or?
Yeah, like, for example, like Isaiah, we got his recording, what's written down, but I'm assuming that God probably spoke to him more than, or he was getting... a revelation or a prophecy, however you want to call it,
yeah.
more than this one specific individual.
Well,
right.
My guess is that is true, but the only stuff we know is the stuff that's recorded.
Yeah.
Yeah, my guess is that he did say, he might have even said other things, but these are the only things we know that are recorded.
So what purpose does it serve to have a book that's so chronologically confusing?
I'm going to argue that these are written in this order, that in the order they are, to give themes, not to give chronological order.
So,
just like Isaiah,
this is compiled by somebody.
Well, I would assume Jeremiah. You know that these are oracles at different times in his life, and now he combines them to tell a story. I don't think it's chronological story. In fact, there's only two books in the Old Testament that I know are fairly chronological. One's Haggai, and the other one is Zechariah, I think, and they're actually quite chronological, but all the other books are not. Even Daniel is not, jumps around a little, but almost every other book is jumping around. So that suggests to me it's not just for a chronology. It must be to tell a story, a theme through there. I think that's what's going on here. Okay? Okay, this history is actually going to be really important for it to fit in. So you've got Josiah, you've got Jehoash, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. Those are basically your kings. They're going to be at the end of Judah. You've got the fall of Nineveh in 612, the battle of Carchemish in 605, the fall of Jerusalem, then the last one in 586. And then these are the events. Josiah tries to bring revival to the nation of Judah. In 609, he dies. Do you remember how he dies?
Shot with an arrow.
Okay, if you remember, where is he and how? What's he doing?
He goes to impede the Egyptians.
At where? Megiddo. Megiddo? And he gets shot by an arrow and dies, right? Okay, so that's basically what happens. And remember, he's a good king, but he just seemed, at that point he dies in battle, okay? Then Jehoiakim is placed on the throne by the people. After Josiah dies, he's placed on the throne. Jehoiakim only reigns 3 months when Pharaoh Necho comes up. So basically what's happening is that when he's put on the throne, Jehoiakim lasts 3 months, Pharaoh Necho comes through, takes him off. Remember, remember earlier his father was fighting against Pharaoh Necho? So he comes through, takes him off. I assume he's probably a little ticked because they've just been defeated at the Battle of Haran, and he's probably ticked. So he comes back on through and takes Jehoahaz off the throne.
Isn't he like a younger brother anyway?
Of Josiah? He's one of Josiah's sons.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, all those last ones are Josiah's sons.
Right, but this one wasn't necessarily in line for the throne. He was younger, and they put him in.
I don't know that, date-wise, that we know which one's youngest. All we know is that he's put there by the people. And then Necho takes him off. Jehoiakim then is actually then put on by Pharaoh Necho, not the people. Okay? He reigns for 11 years but rebels against the Babylonians. They get ready to come and punish him. He actually dies before the Babylonians get there. So his son, another one of Josiah's sons, is put on the throne, once again, for 3 months, and the Babylonians come and take him off. So wouldn't you hate to be the relative of Jehoiakim? I'd hate to be any of these guys, because basically what happens, they get put on the throne, a king or pharaoh comes through, takes him off, and puts his own person in there. Okay, and that's what's happened. Zedekiah then Nebuchadnezzar comes through, takes Jehoiachin off the throne, and Zedekiah is then put on. Okay? Each of those last four people are sons of Josiah.
But Jehoiachin is going to be the only one that survives all of this.
That's true. Yeah. The others actually either get killed or sent into captivity. Zedekiah actually gets his eyes put out and killed too.
It's messed up.
Okay, that's a little of the history, just so you know what's happening during Josiah's time, or Hezekiah's time. Jeremiah's time. We'll get it yet. All right. In 586, you've got Nebuchadnezzar coming and destroying Jerusalem, or Judah. This is the third time he's had to come to this region to get the people to pay taxes or to punish them. Okay? So it's his third time. I assume he's pretty ticked by now. Babylon destroys Jerusalem and deports most of the population. In actual fact, the second deportation in 597, it looks like there's more people sent off, but I think that's because in the last one, more people are killed. I don't think they then are taking many captives. They want to kill them, and then they do take some captive. Okay? So it looks like the second one is the biggest, but I think it's because in the third one, a lot more people die. At that point, the temple's burned and destroyed, and Gedaliah was placed in the governor as the governor over that area. He's in a place called Mizpah, just north of here, but he's actually ruling this area for Babylon.
For 3 months.
Gedaliah, he actually gets killed too by people in Israel.
Yeah.
There's what's called the Lachish Astrakhan, and I think you should at least know about it. Basically, it talks about, it says, "Let my Lord know that we are watching for the signal fires of Lachish, according to all the indications which my Lord has given, for we cannot see Azekah." Basically, what these are signal posts. These are places along here that are like fortified cities, and the signal fires told them if they'd been taken. Once they got, at night, if they were burning, that meant that city was still alive. It hadn't been taken yet. If the fires are no longer burning, that means that city's been taken. That's basically what this means. They can't see the signal fires from Azekah. That probably means it just been destroyed. Now, we don't know if this is in 586. That's when that Nebuchadnezzar came this way and wiped out those two cities and then went to Jerusalem. We don't know if it's then or if it's in 601 or in 701, because Sennacherib did a similar kind of thing. I actually think it's probably 586, but I don't know that for sure.
Is that with the potsherd thing? Somewhere in Scripture where it talks about the fire and the potsherd that they would burn or whatever, signals or...
I don't... Oh, when he burned... Is this where the king burns the thing of Jeremiah's? Is that what you mean?
Well, it's talking about where they're sending messages, and I think it's the same thing.
About
the cities, there's burning to signal.
I don't know if they use potsherds to do that, because I would have thought that they use stuff bigger than that. You know, potsherds, usually pots are very small, so my guess
is they're
using big fires to send the signal. At least that's my guess. Okay. Jeremiah's message. Jeremiah had a very difficult task, namely to declare judgment on a guilty nation who were poised on the brink of destruction. If the people did not heed Jeremiah's message, they would be destroyed, and yet Jeremiah continued to warn them, even though he is oppressed and persecuted. It would seem like, at a certain point, if I was Jeremiah, I'd just say, you know, forget you. I'm not going to tell you anymore, and I'm just leaving. But he doesn't. He sticks it out. So I actually, in that sense, I'm kind of proud of him. Jeremiah witnessed the death of his country. And that basically, he saw it all. Okay, in chapter 1, verse 4-5, it says this. Now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I consecrated you, and I appointed you a prophet to the nations. Then I said, Alas, Lord God, I do not know how to speak, because I am a youth." Well, he's already talking to God, so you know he's not such a small... That word youth is probably somebody under 30. Because usually until you were 30, you weren't considered old enough to talk to the leaders. So my guess is, he thinks he's too young to do this. Okay? But the Lord said to me, "Do not say I'm a youth, because everywhere I send you, you will go, and all that I command you, you will speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord." So basically, he's saying, his response, "I don't know how to speak." But God's response is, "Well, everywhere I send you, you'll go, and everything I tell you to say, you'll say. What more can I ask?" So Jeremiah is going to do everything God basically asks him to. He then says he's going to put his words in his mouth. Basically, it's going to go on and tell us that. So that's going to be his job. Look what it says. "Behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have appointed you this day over the nations and over the kingdoms, to pluck up, to break down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant." In actual fact, he doesn't get to see much of the building and the planning. He gets to see a lot of the destruction and the overthrow. Okay. His commissioning is very similar to Jeremiah's is similar to both Moses and Gideon. They both have a commission. They both object to it, and they both have reassurances from God, and then a sign. So it's kind of interesting they all have that similar structure. In chapter 1, the rest of that, there's basically two images for it. It says, "Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, What do you see, Jeremiah? And he said, I see a rod of an almond tree. And the Lord said to me, You have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it." I don't get it, do you? Why is an almond tree a branch of an almond tree, and he says, I'm watching over my word to perform it. Well, in actual fact, in Hebrew, it's a play on words. Almond tree is shaked. Shokane means to watch over. So he's basically, it's a play on words. And I think that's what he's getting at there. Okay, then it makes some sense. Then he has another image. Look at verse 13. The word of the Lord came to me a second time, saying, what do you see? And he said, I see a boiling pot facing away from the north. If it's facing away from the north, it's falling south, right? So it's going to be them falling on Israel, and it's going to be from the north, which would be how they would come up. Assyria would have to come up. Babylon would have to come up before they came down. Well, this one we know it's going to be Babylon that does it, time-wise. Okay? Look what he says to him. For behold, I'm calling all the families of the kingdoms of the north, declares the Lord. They will come and they will set each one his throne at the entrance of the gates of the Jerusalem and against all its walls around and against all the cities of Judah. I will pronounce my judgments on them concerning their wickedness. Therefore, they have forsaken me and have ordered sacrifices to other gods and worshiped the works of their own hands. Now gird up your loins and arise and speak to them all that I command. Do not be dismayed, or I will dismay you before them. Do you see what he's saying? Don't get discouraged, or I'll discourage you in front of them. Now behold, I have made you today a fortified city, a pillar of iron and a wall of bronze. Remember, iron and bronze are the strongest metals they know. To the kings of Judah, to his princes, so that the priests and to the people of the land, and they will fight against you, but they will not overcome you. For I am with you, to deliver you, declares the Lord. When he's sitting in prison, I wonder if he realizes that. Or when he's sitting in the stocks, or maybe he gets to do both of those. Yeah, I hope he remembers that. All right. I'm going to talk about applying biblical passages. My understanding is that we apply timeless principles. Because I've heard people use, Jeremiah's call and apply it directly. But I think we need to realize there's principles in there, and that's what we can bring over principles. Just because God called Jeremiah doesn't mean he's going to call us in the exact same way. So we use the principles. Well, here's God's nature stays the same. Therefore, there must be some timeless truths in here. Okay? My guess is when he says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, I believe that's a timeless principle. I believe that God forms us and knows us before we ever come about. Okay, so those kind of things I think we can use. Timeless truths are the things which are not bound by the historical circumstances. Okay, because God stays the same and reacts the same to us, those are the kind of things we can apply. Okay, all right, I better let you go. In chapters 2 through 24, we have what are called Book 1, the Oracles Against Jerusalem. And basically we're going to go through and see how it explains the punishments of Israel. Okay? Alright? We'll make it, I hope.
Let's see how many times.